Welcome back to the Green Front, the first edition of this new year, 2014. Probably should get a new theme song, even though I'm fond of that one. Guess that's why I've had it for so long. Want to welcome Doyle Rice to the program. And Doyle Rice is with USA Today. He's been covering weather and climate for that publication since 2004, from blizzards and hurricanes to tornadoes and floods. The USA's wild weather keeps him quite busy, and the latest is the polar vortex, this cold snap that's got everyone talking, and mainstream media as well, but only rarely linking it to, well, climate change. Maybe it shouldn't be part of climate change coverage, but we're going to find out what Doyle Rice thinks, and I'm hoping D.R. Tucker is still on the line. I don't have Internet access.
Yes.
Because
yes.
Our power went out. Okay, great. So I can't talk to the studio as I usually do. But Doyle Rice, thanks for being with us. Happy New Year to you, and glad that you're all over this, because you have a very wide mainstream audience. Every time I travel and go to a hotel, it's always USA Today that's right there outside my door or in the lobby, and I always pick it up because I enjoy it, and especially happy to see, you know, the really for quite a while, pretty good coverage of what's going on with climate change.
Well, thanks. Thanks for so much for having me. Appreciate it. We actually had a year-long climate change series just this last year, specifically about how it's impacting all across America right now, not just something in the future. So,
Right. Yeah,
we're trying to stay on top of it, definitely. And and this week we had some of the coldest air we've had in the U.S. in the last 20 years, and it was courtesy of and in part due to that, the term that's now the buzzword of the week was a polar vortex, which has been around a while, but we kind of media seem to latch onto it because it's kind of a neat word, and it's something that people can kind of get their heads around, and it really kind of took off this week. So,
And this morning, Al Roker on the Today Show. He shouted, "Stop it!" to all those who have been trying to claim that polar vortex is just a made-up term that meteorologists are using it to try to, you know, attach it to climate change somehow. And he pulled out a textbook from his college days in the late 1950s, where there was a description, in fact, of polar vortex. So there. So he did it in his usual friendly manner, as he does. But it was just nice to see him say, "Stop it," because that's really what this feels like sometimes. Like, we need to just give these children a timeout.
That's a good way of putting it.
A long time out. Maybe send them up to the Arctic and get lost in the polar vortex for a while.
Right. Well, fortunately, it has receded back to from whence it came, and it's making a nice retreat back north of the border. So for at least for the next, looks like week to 10 days, we don't have to worry about it or anything like that. But it certainly was a shock to the system, I'll say that, for people who we haven't really had an outbreak like that in quite some time. So,
where are you based?
We're based in Washington, D.C.
Okay, so you're right in the middle of it.
Yeah. We got it for about 36 hours. We got it from late Monday until just this morning. It's kind of easing. So we got about 36 hours of what folks in Minneapolis see pretty much for a few months of the winter. So it was not something we'd want to go through too often here.
So. I got a taste of it again with a layover in Toronto. We were sitting there on the runway for 3 hours while the snow was piling up so quickly. We're not used to seeing that here in California, of course.
Right. And are you based in Southern California?
Based in San Francisco, where we're facing a drought, actually.
Right. I know you've had the driest year on record, both in L.A. and San Francisco.
Exactly. So, yeah. And my cousins who recently moved here from England because they couldn't stand the increasingly cold, foggy, wet weather, and we know Great Britain is known for that, but it's like almost every day. The three kids can't stand playing soccer in the rain anymore. And they just came back from visiting England 2 weeks. And that's after living here 4 months, where we, I think, maybe had a day, maybe two, or a day and a half of rain. They came back after 2 weeks in England and said it didn't stop raining there. And, you know, what's going on where it's excessively soggy there and so dry here? And I said, Well, dear cousin of mine, this is what we talk about on my show. Tune in and you'll find out what's going on. Mother Nature is very confused, and it's because we've been fueling her.
It's part of, yes, definitely that's the case. There is a there's, you know, connections between dryness in the West and you know, the drought that they've been going through out there is you know, there's a potential link to some of the global warming. So one thing this week was, of course, that you know, that there is a chance that some of these Arctic outbreaks could become, you know, as counterintuitive as it is, that they could become more frequent due to climate change. But there's still a lot of research that needs to be done on that, a one-to-one correlation between between climate change and these kind of Arctic outbreaks. It's still hard to make that case yet.
Doyle, when you in your great piece, you noted that the cold weather, that the polar vortex is being seized upon by those who think that I guess Al Gore somehow invented climate change. Do you anticipate that there'll ever be a time where that sort of thing stops, or do you think it's sort of one of these dynamics whereby climate change and extreme weather has simply become a part of the culture war, and therefore for the obvious political reasons and the obvious, you know, things that motivate right wingers to deny it, it'll never really stop. I mean do you see a point at which we can get beyond this whole thing of people confusing weather and climate, or do you just see that sort of thing happening in perpetuity politically?
I'd like to think that at some point in the near future there'll be a time when there is a little bit more being on the same page about it. And you know, it's unfortunate that weather was one of those subjects that always seemed to kind of bring everybody together. Everybody experienced it, everybody had to deal with it, and yet right now weather is you know, it's divided almost between red and blue. It's when you get something like this, it's just all of a sudden everybody's calcified on one side or the other about as it's related to climate change. And to me, it's something I'd like to think that in the near future there will be a little bit less, you know, partisan bickering about it, and more just, you know, trying to find a way to solve the problem.
We certainly support that view, and we talk about that a lot on this program because it has been co-opted by politics and politicized, and so too many people use that as an excuse to say, oh, well, it's a political issue, you know, and kind of toss it out when it's, you know, a very practical issue, and we, you know, should see through that.
Yeah, it's something that you know, it's here to stay. It's not going away. And no matter, you know, it's not one of those issues that you know, necessarily works well with budget cycles or election cycles or you know, talk radio or, you know, debates on TV. It's always going to be there, and it's always going to be just kind of hovering over us. And, you know, as I said, you'd like to think that at some point we'll get past it and move on to get a good solution.
Absolutely. And as you know, that, you know, worldwide we're seeing these you know, intense heat in places like Argentina and places in Australia and also in Brazil. Do you think that, generally speaking, obviously, you know certainly Betsy and I think USA Today does a very good job of covering this, but do you think, generally speaking, there isn't enough attention in American media paid to extreme weather events going on worldwide, with the exception, I mean, granted, when there's something like Typhoon Haiyan, that gets a lot of attention, at least for a few days. But generally, do you think there's an awareness in the United States, through United States media, of some of the crazy extreme weather events we're seeing throughout the world?
Yeah, probably not. I think in general we all could do a better job of just foreign coverage, and so we're not so isolated and insular here, that it would be a good idea to get a little bit more broader perspective on things. As you said, when a big typhoon or a disastrous earthquake or something, a big storm in Europe happens, you know, we do cover it that way. But I think, yeah, more a global perspective would be better, because as I might have pointed out, if not in that article, then others, that the U.S. is only 2% of the Earth's surface. So really what's going on here is not even remotely representative of the Earth as a whole. So I think, you know, a broader perspective is something that we should look for. At the same time, the U.S. does kind of lead the world in extreme weather disasters. Usually we, just by nature of our climate and topography and meteorology and the fact that we have so many kind of structures in the way, we do kind of tend to have more a variety of disasters than almost any other country in the world. So there is something to be said for our looking inward in that way, and that we have just the ferocious variety of weather that some places or many places don't have.
Good point. Doyle, I was thinking how USA Today, perhaps more than any other national paper, really has a broad, you know, reach, so that you probably reach the red and blue states equally. Maybe
yeah.
You have some statistics on that. Maybe I'm wrong. But again, just because you seem to be in so many hotels, people travel, they have access to the paper, even if they normally wouldn't where they live or don't subscribe to it, perhaps. I'm wondering what kind of reaction the paper has received as you have taken on climate change and made those connections. Do you get the usual crazies and hate mail and threats, or not so much?
Yeah, it's a mix. Just looking at the comments section, you get a sense that there's very different opinions about our stance and about the material we put out there. It's sometimes it's a little scary to look too closely at them. So I try not to take anything personally or look too closely at it, because I think even if you look at the comments, I believe only a small fraction of people who read a given article actually comment on it. So you realize there's folks there who, you know, have a very strong opinion about things and show their opinions in there in those comments. But you kind of get a sense also there's a large kind of silent body of people who are reading it hopefully with some grain of acceptance and not instantly flicking on a switch of against or for.
Yeah, it is a very vocal small minority that do this, but unfortunately it's hard to ignore them sometimes.
Yeah, and as I said, it's just kind of been lumped in with one of these issues that automatically there's like a default position that some people get into, and it's a little frustrating at times.
Mm, you think?
I think so.
Yeah. Oh, boy, frustrating is putting it mildly if you've been covering this issue as long as I have.
Yes.
But that's another story.
Okay. Yeah, and as I said, we try to, you know, at one point we had kind of a balance there, but, you know, in the last couple years, our new editor said you don't really need to have a, you know, that false editorial balance anymore between the scientists and the deniers. So,
was that one person, Doyle? I know it's DR's turn for a question, but I'm just curious: is there someone we should be giving credit to at USA Today?
Well, our new editor in chief, David Calloway, is one of the folks who he did kind of spawn or create the idea for the climate change series, and he was one who did say that we don't necessarily need to put that spin of a denier in every story. So it would be the current editor in chief, David Calloway, who's been here about a year and a half now.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Doyle, this is not a question. This is simply an observation. And you mentioned your editor, David Calloway, and I know obviously you're not responsible for this editorial policy, but I do want to make an observation. I'm sure you're aware that USA Today has come under a lot of criticism. Criticism that I personally agree with about the tactic of when there's an editorial calling for climate action, there'll be the sort of opposing view from some sort of spokesperson for a fossil fuel industry front group, or some sort of person, sort of like a Board Lomborg, who encourages action not to be taken.
Yeah.
As I said before, I am among the people who oppose that tactic by USA Today. However, I do want to make a devil's advocate argument against my own position, which is to say that when they do run those opposing views from the fossil fuel industry think tanks, it's a good insight into those on the scientifically wrong side of the position, and it's a good insight to the views of those whom history will prove wrong. And in fact, it goes back to something that the former Republican Congressman Bob Inglis observed, where he said that people who deny basic physics, as long as they're recorded, as long as they're recorded by history, so we'll look back one day and know who was wrong and know who took the pro-pollution side of the argument. Again, this is not something you have to respond to unless you choose to do so. But I do want to make that observation out there because it is a bone of controversy, especially in the climate science community about that tactic from USA Today, which, grant you, again, you're not responsible for that. You didn't create that, but yeah. It is something where, you know, you see it, and as disgusted as I am by it, and speaking for Betsy, I'm sure she's disgusted by the presence of the deniers in that opposing view section. Nevertheless, you're seeing those who will be damned by history, and from a certain perspective, that's an interesting thing.
Well, thanks, and yeah, I mean, it's certainly a valid point and a valid criticism. I think it's just that that template has been in place on the editorial page for quite a while now, and it's kind of just been established as a way of presenting, you know, issues. And I think it's just been it's kind of been the way it always has been. And whenever they do put one issue there, they get an opposing viewpoint. It is always tends to be from the same. Same groups like the Heartland Institute or Cato Institute or something like that, and you know, you do kind of see the same points over and over, and you know, putting a historical spin on it gives it kind of a fresh way of thinking about it, and that's a good point.
I hate to bring up this person's name even, but maybe we'll say for the last time this year, even though it's the first show of the year. Every time this happens, where we see the deniosaurs, as I call them, jump in, we hear from Donald Trump. Now, of all the Americans, of all the people on the planet, he probably single-handedly, you know, contributes more to emissions than anybody. I mean, just if you're looking at eco-footprint, right? He's way off the charts.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
How dare he? I mean, isn't he ripe for a smackdown?
Well, I think just you put him there. You know, you don't want to say to knock him down, but you just put him there, and people can make their own judgments about him. I don't necessarily think that having him there is a problem, because I think you see who it is, and you kind of expect it from him, and you know, he does provide a little bit of. A little more excitement when you see his name there, because all the things that he's associated with as well, his TV show and everything else, so that you kind of...
Yeah, but I guess that's maybe the mass consumer culture likes that. But, you know, for those of us who lose sleep at night concerned about what kind of climate our children are going to inherit and beyond, and the fact that he's such a clown figure, really almost a caricature, it's like enough already, you know, especially, again, given his, you know, disproportionate impact.
Coming
from every orifice. Sorry, okay,
I don't think I'd actually ever used him specifically in an article before. So it just happened that he was one of the ones this week who was making noise about it. So
and I'm not blaming you or USA Today. I'm just tired of seeing him blow hard. Okay, enough.
He was an easy fish in a barrel type of thing.
Easy target. Okay, DR, you've got the last question.
Well, just the last observation. I think Donald Trump's mouth is a very good argument for wind power.
For wind power, okay. I got it, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. We try to laugh here, Doyle, because sometimes you just can't help but want to cry.
Right, okay.
But let's hope for a new year. I started out, you know, with a lot of hope, and I'm going to keep that. This may be the year we break through the green ceiling. By that, I mean mainstream media actually devotes an hour or so of programming once a week, maybe even daily, to our embattled planet and our life support system and our shrinking resources and growing population and consumption trends. We are headed for a cliff, and the sooner we start dealing with it and having intelligent conversations everywhere around America, beginning in mainstream media, not just to mention, but actually drill down a bit, pardon the expression, I think that's really our only hope for tackling, you know, what we're up against.
Well, great, and I appreciate what you're doing, and thanks for calling me and having me on the show.
It was our pleasure. Thanks so much, DR Tucker, for lining up today's show, including Doyle Rice and Dan Weiss. And that rhymes. That does it for this edition of the program. If you'd like to find out about the truth, the connection between the polar vortex and climate change, and you just joined us mid-show, well, you can go to the archives at prn.fm later or thegreenfront.com, and you will see the entire show. The segments are broken down there by my great archivist, Philippe Boucher, so you can listen for yourself, and you can tell all your friends at the water cooler what is true and what is a bunch of nothing more than hot air. That does it for this edition of the program. See you next week. In the meantime, have a great and green and warm week. Bye-bye. But we can turn it around if we just come together.